Michael Meets is a podcast interviewing people about their life, work, their interests and aspirations. Apologies for the delay in releasing this episode. Work gets super busy and at the end of the day, that's my priority. I've set up some great characters to interview over this next few months and have scheduled out some time to make sure it happens. So I can guarantee you a podcast each fortnight from now until Christmas. Thanks for sticking with me though, and remember to share this podcast with your friends and family. You kept me well up in the iTunes charts for downloads and it was very much appreciated. I hope that we can get back up there. In this week's episode, Kathleen talks about her work as a street trader, making her communion on a Saturday morning and selling cabbages that afternoon, the sense of community you get from living in a council flat, that government ministers should have common sense, and about her love for Ireland. At this point in the podcast, I normally give you a little history rundown about the year the interviewee was born. This week I can't. I'll let Kathleen Farrell, born in the city of Dublin, explain why.
So, Kathleen, just to start this off, will you tell me your name, your age, and...
I know, hold on a minute, go on. My age doesn't comment. You don't ask a lady our age. What's wrong with you?
I just want to know what was going on in history with them when you were born, you see.
So when I was born, I wasn't born, I was invented. It's Catherine Farrell. Sorry, Kathleen Farrell. Don't put Catherine into it. Yeah. Because the police be looking for me. So it's Kathleen Farrell. I was born and for a short period of time. We lived in 6 Ushers Islands. And it was the tenement houses. And it was called the bridal room, my mother had rented. So we lived there for a period of time. I had brothers and sisters that would have slid on the Liffey. The first time, I think, in the history of the Liffey, it actually froze over.
Yeah.
And a few of the people around, because Guinness is there, did great big Guinness's ropes and everything. So they put the rope from one side of the Liffey over to the other side, right, through the bridge. And then they brought her up a bit. So then everyone wanted to slide over. But in case it broke, you had a rope tied around your neck.
Yeah.
So the way it was, you tied it around you, and then the person over there would come up one length and you'd go over that length. And that's the way they did it. Did it for, but that was then. That was only ever once, you know. But it was a great bit of fun. Remember that. That was a good crack.
And are you going to say what year you were born?
Well, I mean, I was born in the 50s, that's all I'm saying.
When you, your ma had rented out the bridal room, did you say?
Yeah, that was it, that was what,
that what
it was
you
called,
did?
Yeah. Because it was a tenement house.
Oh, right, okay.
It was a tenement house on the top of it, because apparently it was the biggest room in it.
Yeah.
That was, and it was called the bridal room. I don't know, maybe there was something to do with that. But when you got married first, the room on the top of it was called the bridal room. And if you're a new bride, you could rent that room.
What for?
To live in. What do you mean, what for? To live in.
I thought you meant, like, for the special night.
Oh, no. To live in.
Oh, right.
They lived there. I don't know. I don't know whether there was restrictions on how much time you could live in the room or anything like that. But then, we moved out of there and we moved up to Marybury Lane.
And what was that like? What age were you when you moved up to Marble Lane?
I was only a kid.
Yeah.
Well, that was all right, you see, because we had 3 bedrooms. We had a sitting room, we had a kitchen and bathroom. Indoor bathroom, which I hadn't got in the tenement.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you used to have to just traipse all the way down the stairs and go out into the yard to, you know, use the facilities in the tenement. But that tenement was spotless clean. That's what I like about it.
Yeah.
Compared to today, and the tenements that I can remember, people inside them that lived in them, they were spotless clean, though they were old buildings.
Mm.
The backyard, because of, you know, you'd have whatever, 50, maybe 30 to 50, or maybe even 30 to 60 people living in a tenement, and there was only one tile, sure, of course, you know, and there was no cobblestones or anything, and that was all just muck. Well, it was all your right and all that, you know. And but actually, that's that. But I loved it. I like my life around the Liberties.
Yeah.
I always have. I could never see myself living outside the Liberties.
Mm.
I could never see myself living in a house. I tried it once, didn't work, didn't like it.
No.
Appropriate for 7 years and got out. No, I like the Liberties, I like flat complexes. Do I like modern apartments? Certainly not. No. I wouldn't like them.
Why not?
I just, they're too enclosed. There's no friendliness in them. There's no happiness in them. There's always a very dull, grey look about them. No. Where council flats is much opened, transparent, and a lot more friendlier.
And you've seen you're growing up, how many brothers and sisters do you have? If you're all in, I'm just thinking if you're in the tenements, like, was it squashed?
Well, no, there was about 5 or 6 in the tenement, maybe 7. When I say, hold on. No, there would have been 7. And 2 adults. So it'd have been 2 plus 7 in family. So the other 3 then was, they were born in the flat complex in Maribyrnong.
And so is that 9 kids?
10.
10.
7 and 3 is 10. Do your maths, man. Do your maths.
No, but I just thought you were counting your man that. So there was 10 of you. Are you in the middle? Where are you?
I'm the 7th.
7th. Yeah, so there was 2, 3 after you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's that like growing up in a house of 10?
Yeah, okay. Grand. Yeah. Grand. The only horrible time would be sleeping time.
Mm.
Because there was double beds and, you know, the 2 up the top and 2 down the bottom.
Yeah.
You know, so you'd be getting elbows and heels and ankles and knees and all that. But other than that, no, I liked it.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with it.
And what was it like being a teenager?
Being a teenager in the area?
Yeah.
Well, for me, it was okay. And for a lot of people, it was okay. Because you always got advice off everybody. All your elders. All mothers and fathers gave all children. Neighbours, even if they had a disagreement with them, they'd say, no, don't be doing that. You shouldn't do this. Go that way. They always gave great advice. Mm. Always great advice. And there was always encouragement to go to work. Are you working yet?
Mm.
You know, people passed you in the street and I'd say, are you not working yet? Are you not in school yet? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And they wouldn't be afraid to turn around and say, hello, Mr. Farrell, oh, Mrs. Farrell, I saw your young fella. And, you know, and it wouldn't be telling, you know, or whatever kind of words people want to use. It wouldn't be, it'd always be all for your own good. Because my mother and father would say, Mr. This, Mrs. This, I saw your daughter, your son. And it always kept us on the right track. Now, I mean, we played piggy, we played skipping, young lads around the area, a few would go mitching from school, go up the canal and swim. They go scutting on the Guinnesses. The scutting on the Guinnesses truck was great. Because it was, you know, the trucks was really great because you had 2 big steel bars and then you had the bar at the bottom and you're acting with your feet up in it.
Yeah, yeah.
You wouldn't be hanging over from your hands. And it was great. Getting up on those Guinness's trucks is fantastic.
Did you do it yourself?
I did indeed. Oh, sure, I climbed trees and everything else. So then you go up to Phoenix Park, right? And you'd go up into St. Kevin's Hospital, most of the time. You'd an orchard there.
Mm.
Should he repair that one more time? Sure, you bring up a shovel and keep knocking around and go in and rob the orchard. And little did we know as we were kids, a few nurses and nuns and all at the time had run you over. But it wasn't that they didn't want you to have the fruit. It's only as you get older, you get wiser. It would be that they turn around and they'd be asking because they'd be sour. So they had to leave them there. The longer you left them on the tree, you see, the sweeter they would be and they'd be eating.
Mm-hmm.
But sure, we'd be out coming home with all these apples, stuff up there, jumpers. Sure, Jesus, they'd knock you out, they'd be that sour. You know. And that'd be all that. But that's what we used to do.
And you'd mentioned, you know, about all the flats and the community, more so than the apartments today, and you'd said about...
Much better community in the council flat complexes than in any private apartments. I really can't understand how they ever got planning permission to build them the way they did build them.
Yeah.
Because they really actually should be more open planned. Because now, well, as you can see, you have elderly people and they're really trapped. They're really like, all of these apartments now is really like private prisons. Because you go in, the door is closed behind you. You go in, and sometimes you don't even know your neighbours.
Mm.
Where if they had open hallways in them, even if they opened the hallways in those, you'd have much better atmosphere.
Mm.
And you'd have better neighbours and communities within those blocks.
Yeah. And you see, when you were growing up, was there any of the neighbours that you always think about, you know, fondly? Like,
well, we used to have Mrs. Johnston in the flat because Was it Mrs. Johnston? Or was Mooney her name? Jeez, I can't remember the woman's name. But in anyhow, you'd go door to door and you'd collect all the vegetable peels, like cabbage peels, potato peels, all those peels, and you'd bring her up to her and she'd give you a Jacob's biscuit. Oh, sure, you are the best thing since sliced bread. You know, you'd go around door to door. Their own mothers and now. Now, in the wintertime, you wouldn't get that much because the mothers would throw the old potato skins and all on the fire and burn them. Yeah.
To keep for the heat, though.
Yeah. Now, most of the time, my mother wouldn't because she always cooked the potatoes in their skin.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the best bit.
Did you enjoy school?
Yeah. I'd say I enjoyed school up to I was about 7 or 8.
Aye.
And then, you see, we'd have to go to market. And we go to market, we'd have to wheel out the stuff on prams and box carts and all.
Yeah.
And fish days, we'd have to scrub the fish tins and all of that and bring them there. But then, I liked that better than school.
So did your parents, did they have a stall before you?
Oh, yeah, and my grandmother.
Oh, tell us about that. I thought you were first.
The first?
Sure, what I know. I'm a blow-in around here.
Sure, I'll only blows in. That's an awful thing to call yourself.
That's what everybody else calls me. So how did your family, like, come back? 1, 2, 3, your grandparents had a stall? How did they get set up, or did anybody ever tell you, like, the history?
Well, it wasn't true. The whole area was all trade.
Mm.
It wasn't just one family, it was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of families traded all over this area.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's from Patrick Street right up to Kamenham, across to Cork Street, across to Keys and Knackers. This was all one big, huge, massive trading area.
Mm.
Because you're Euston Station, you see.
Yeah.
So people be coming by train or horse and carts and all of that. You know, country people coming up for whatever they'd have to come up for. Yeah. You know? This was always.
So what was the first...
Like, I mean...
What was the first stall in your family then? Do you know?
The first stall
yeah.
in my family.
Yeah, what was the first thing they started trading?
Oh, it would have been vegetables and it would have been fish.
Yeah.
And that's what it would have been.
Yeah.
See, they had the fish market, which is just, everyone thinks Smithfield is the fish market. Smithfield was a market, a trading market.
Mm.
It wasn't the fish market and it wasn't the fruit market.
Mm.
Because they're down past the forecourts. They're between the forecourts and Capel Street, those markets.
Yeah.
They were built. Before that, that was all a trading area. And then Guinness's came along and they built the Ivy Market. And the reason why that was built was because whoever it was, King Henry or King George or whoever was here at the time, it was because he lived on the north side of the city and they'd to go to Patrick's Cathedral.
Mm.
So it was to take them people, that's how those markets were built. It was to take the people off the streets and put them in there.
Mm.
You know, it was for the poor apple dealers at the time. You know?
Yeah.
But like everyone looks at Mere Street as being, Mere Street is the, you know, is the Molly Malone. The Liberties is the Molly Malone of Ireland. If you go back in history to the generations, the Liberties is the Molly Malone of Ireland.
So you started working then about 9, 10, like helping your man dad out?
Well, no, I trading since I was a child.
Mm.
Even before I made me Holy Communion.
Mm.
I made me Holy Communion in Catherine's Church on a Saturday and I sold cabbage after my communion on my mother's stall.
Did you?
Yeah. Because we at the time, the cabbage used to come in bunches of six. And you'd have to open them up. There'd be a little bit of old wire tied around them. You know, and you'd have to open them up because people would only want two. Some families would want a bunch or two bunches. And some families would want even three and four. You know, bigger families, huge families.
Mm.
You know, and other people would only need two or three heads.
Mm.
Now, in the winter time, when it'd be small, everyone kind of need a bunch or two bunches. Mm. And then the people that would have needed three and four bunches, they'd need five and six bunches at that stage, you know.
Yeah.
But then she'd get the crafty little shop and say, well, I like that one and that one and that one. So it meant you had to open up two bunches, you know.
Trying to get the best.
Yeah. But then, you see, as you grow and you get more sense, you realise that that was just the greedy customer. And there is greed in people. There's nothing you can really do about that.
Yeah.
You know?
She looked at me with the flowers, I'm always bargaining, you know.
Well, this is it, you know.
Has it always been on Thomas Street?
Always.
In that same spot?
Thomas Street. I used to sell outside the Tivoli.
Yeah.
On the bingo nights. We sold outside St. Kevin's Hospital. Now that's St. James's Hospital today,
mm-hmm.
but it was St. Kevin's back then.
Mm.
We used to sell in Crow Park, Lansdowne Road, and then rock concerts come in and all of that.
Yeah.
But that sure is of later years.
Yeah.
You know?
So now do you just stick to Thomas Street?
Yes.
You don't have to tell me if you don't want to talk.
Oh no, it's only Thomas Street now because we had all these so-called very, very well-educated people that's within those companies. And sure, they wouldn't want street traders. They don't want them.
Yeah.
Like Crow Park wouldn't want you in Crow Park. Though you will go down and you get a one-day license of the corporation, which is the new name, Dublin City Council. But you wouldn't be allowed to trade in the area of Crow Park, so it's not good to you. So even all the banter of Crow Park is all gone between, if you want to say, a city folk and country folk, that's all gone. They've done away with all of that. Society today doesn't want people to communicate with one another.
Mm.
And they do their utmost best to keep pushing that and driving it and driving it and driving it.
Why do you think that is?
Because they're ignorant. Totally ignorant. And they're driving for a 2- and 3-tier society. And that's what they're driving for. Even our government today, as you know, is driving. That's their wishes. It's their desire to drive that through society today.
Mm. And how do you feel about it?
Well, it's absolutely disgraceful. Because what all these people in these companies and the different institutions don't realise is they have to get old. And they're not looking at the big picture now. Mm. And this is no disrespect to anybody. We are a multicultural society. My opinion, if Irish citizens don't take this aboard and really think about it and put some thought into it, they are going to be looked after by a class of people that it isn't in their genes or genetic makeup to be kind.
We keep what we're, the country's changing that fast, and because the government are keep on changing their policies, and it is making people life tougher for people, do you know what I mean, isn't it?
Policies. What policies does government make? Really and truly.
Sure.
What policies do the government make? The policies of this country is made by the media. The media drives policies here. If it wasn't for the media splashing her all over the television screens, radio shows, the papers, the part of the media that knows the heart and soul of the country and sits and listens to the genuine working people of society.
Mm.
If it wasn't for them, the whole country would be in tatters. I do really think that we're gone to a stage, and particularly home here in Ireland, they're really and truly government. You only need 5 good ministers. And yes, they should be very, very well educated. But there's one education that they should have, and that's common sense education. And they don't have it. But they should have it in abundance, and that's what we need.
Yeah.
Drive this country forward. Brilliant.
You're flying. Here, don't tap that in the water.
You have to stop giving me all this brandy.
You'll be people be thinking that this is where I have a big budget and all, like getting everybody loosened up. Like,
are you serious? Stop.
So you mentioned earlier on about the greedy customers. So obviously in your head you've different types of customers. Tell me about all the different types of customers.
You haven't got different types of customers. People are people.
Aye.
You just have them. They think different ways.
Aye. So do you know, give me some examples.
Well, no, that wouldn't be nice. Now I'm running a business. No.
No, but there's good things as well. Like, is there not?
There's greedy people. That's all I'm saying on it. No, no, you can't do that.
All right, I'm feeling
that. That's, you know.
No, I thought you were going to say there's the customer who, like, you know, stands and looks and thinks about it and takes up all your time. And
oh, we have them as well.
Doesn't buy anything. And then there's the other one that, you know, your regulars or...
Oh, yeah. And we have the customers that come along. And it's only this here. And it's only that there. And I used to say to them, no, it couldn't be, but I stopped doing that because they just go on and on and on because they haven't realised that the product they were actually looking at for whatever price it'd be, that our product was entirely different.
Mm.
There'd be different weights, different litres in it, and all of that.
Yeah, yeah. And have you got customers coming to you like for years and years and years?
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, I've some of my mammy's customers. My mammy, heaven be her bed, she's a long time gone. Mm-hmm. But I still have some of her customers yeah. come to me. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. And them customers would remember my grandmother, because they would have been children of my grandmother.
Yeah.
They say, yeah, well, I remember your grandmother. Because they were children and they remembered. And they these would be people in their 80s and 90s and all that yeah, would remember yeah, yeah. by not my grandmother. And they're 80 and 90 years of age now.
That must be a nice feeling, though. Hmm? Must be a nice feeling yeah. if they start talking about it and stuff.
I've about 14 or 15 customers. And there's five generations of that family buys off of me today.
Mm.
Where you've the granny, or you've the great-great-granny, the granny, no, three grannies, four grannies back, three grannies back, two grannies back, and then the granny.
Yeah.
And then I have the daughter, and I'd have the niece or nephew or whatever, you know, and son and daughter and the niece and the nephews of that. Buys off me today. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And we have some buzz and fun with them because the elders of that family, you have to go, just go there. You have to. Then people were A, B, C when we had nothing and the whole lot. You have to go. Oh yes. You couldn't let them people go out of business.
Mm.
And thank God for them, because the less educated and the less well off in society sees that, and then if they've problems, they'll ask you.
Mm.
Like, you know, I've people coming along and say, well, it's such a thing with this solicitor, and it's such a thing with the hospital, and such a thing with the council and the ESB and that. And they don't mind asking you for help.
Mm.
And that has came up through the generations. But the more stalls they get rid of, that's another part of this great little country of ours that's going to be washed away.
Yeah, because you're preventing other service, like you're supporting people.
Loads of services. Loads and loads and loads of services.
Yeah.
Just today now, a customer that buys off of me has a person that terminally ill in St. James's Hospital. They haven't got a will, they haven't got this, that and the other. And she says, you know, he has a brother and his brother lives out in Spain and what will I do? And I says, what you'll do is, darling, because you have to be looking after him for all these weeks, you go into a solicitor now. As I said, the man's going to have to be buried.
Mm.
So I said, with all the new legislation with the banks and all, you're going to go into a solicitor now. The solicitor will give you the right papers so as that instead of financial companies coming after yourself, they won't, because what the uncle has will sort out A, B and C.
Mm.
And that would be the, and that can be no bother about that. And she says, can you do that? I said, of course you can do that. You go into a solicitor, you bring in the man's details, you bring in your own details, you explain your case, and it can be done.
Mm.
Now, it's a race against the clock for this family, because the man is definitely terminally ill.
Mm.
So it's up now to the solicitor to speed up himself and have this right and proper. And then it can move, God forbid, all harm. When the time comes, everything will be right and proper.
Yeah. And do you know you'd said about they want to get rid of the stalls or the street traders? Have they tried to get rid of you?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What did they do to try and get rid of you?
Well, for one is they want us to get new... they want us to move out of that area. They wanted us to move over to Keys and Acres. I'm calling the Keys and Acres. You know that whiskey place, new whiskey place?
Newmarket?
Newmarket.
Keelings? Up beside Teeling's there?
Newmarket. Up there. What are people going up there for?
There's no footfall up there, sure.
There's no footfall anywhere. And just the infrastructure of what they're doing, it's just clogging up the whole place. Clogging up the whole place. That's exactly what they're doing. But you can't tell them that because, you see, they're engineers. So why would a street trader with their education bracket, as one engineer said, you're a peasant person. I says, I'm delighted. I said, I might be in your eyes, I'm a peasant person. But I said, I'm an Iodam happy one.
Somebody said that to me.
Oh, yeah.
Recently, like?
Recently, yes.
Jesus. That's wild. That's out of order, like.
No, I thought it was great fun. I really thought, I got great fun out of it. I got great fun out of it.
Yeah.
When he said it, I got great fun out of it.
Did you go through him for a shortcut?
No, I just, as I turned around and I said to him, I said, I'm really delighted. I'm definitely delighted because I said, this is going to come up again. And it only came up a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
It only came up a couple of weeks ago. He was with a head official out of council and the mapping out of a road with bicycle lanes, bus lanes. And of course I knew the man because I've heard interviews of him. But when the man came, I said, like, well, that's all right. I said, in Europe, you've containers 40 foot, no, they're 55 feet long now.
Yeah.
You know, they're 55 feet long. They have 180 degree angle where when they're turning at places, they can't, it's blind spot, they can't see.
Mm.
But of course, now this engineer now knew all of this. Because I'm the peasant person and I didn't know all of this now. I didn't know, so like I didn't know what I was speaking about.
Yeah.
But he was there on the day and I was speaking to him. And greatly to my surprise, the next day, the engineer that said I was a peasant person was actually up with workers redoing all the signage on the road.
What's some of the funniest things that's happened to you or you've been involved in? Because you're always up to something.
Me?
There's a bit of a glint in your eye, like, you know. You'd have a bit of crack, like.
Oh yeah, sure. You get great bit of crack when they, you know, people coming along and really thinking that you're stupid.
Aye.
You know, and speaking down to you, and then they'd actually be trying to teave off the stall and all. You get a great bit of crack there, oh yeah.
You'd have people stealing off your stall.
Oh yeah. Oh God, yeah. Oh yeah. We had a customer and years a customer. And you would say the trust that you had in her was serve yourself. And I just happened to have to come down and I come down on the bus and got off the bus and as I was just crossing over and I just waited to see and I just said, so there's some of the shortages at the end of the month that it's actually stolen. Where that'd be gone, and I actually just saw her, tapped her on the shoulder and I just said, but passes you by now.
Mm. Was she not mortified?
People like that don't be mortified.
Mm.
That's the difference. That's, you know, that's how you know people.
Yeah.
You know, true, genuine people.
Yeah.
You know, people like that don't be mortified. It's their way of fun and laugh and actually hello and how are you and how is Timbuktu and back again. And yet to be doing it like that, then that cop, they don't be mortified.
Mm.
Because it's their trade, it's their way of life. So yeah. They don't be mortified.
No comments on it, like?
Oh, no.
Mm.
Oh, no conscience on it. What used to be very good was there used to be two cake shops up at Cork Street. And now at this time you go off the market, and I'm talking 30, 40 years ago, you go to the market, and on life it's banking all in the market, but the people have been the strawberries, and should have strawberries, you'd be bursting, not like these new packaging and all they have now. And they'd be all bursting and all, but and they'd come down, and they'd be buying their, like, raspberries and blueberries and strawberries when they'd be in season, and gooseberries and all that, because they make gooseberry pies. And the rhubarb as well, and they'd be making all those kind of rhubarb cakes and rhubarb pies and everything. And the best thing about that was, you know, they'd bring you down a cake. They'd give you a small little cake. Sure, that'd be great. That'd be the best thing since sliced bread, a cake. And you see, you'd get one of those every day. Well, every day that they'd be down, which when it'd start off for us, which would be every day, Monday to Saturday.
Yeah.
And if it was that they opened up on a Sunday morning, and if they were short of stuff, and we had it when we sold at St. Kevin's, they'd come up and get the stuff there if they were short. So you'd get a cake on Sunday as well, and that was brilliant. Oh, shit, Jesus Christ, that was great. And the people that, because it was fruit and veg and fish and flowers and all that we sold, the people that work in Jacobs and all, and the people that worked in Cadbury's and all. Now, these would be customers of ours, but they'd work in there and they could purchase a package of broken, bag of broken biscuits, you know, and you'd get them. Oh, shit, Jesus Christ, you were in heaven. Oh, are you joking me? They were brilliant times. Cakes and biscuits. Oh, shit, you'd be over the moon with yourself. I'm telling you, really and truly over the moon. If you said, here's a whole career change, and you have all this comfort within your career change, you won't be out in the cold, you know, all of this, and I would not take it for no money. I wouldn't change.
Mm.
I definitely wouldn't change.
It's in your heart and soul, is it?
I love it.
Yeah.
I absolutely, thoroughly, utterly enjoy it. Whether it's, you know, arthritis, hoof heel, all of that, all the pain and ache, no, there's where you want to be.
Yeah.
Because you meet the down and outs. You meet people that think they're smart in education. You know, with education, smartness, you meet the rogues and Chan Sharan, you meet all of them,
mm.
and you have great fun every day.
Yeah.
And you do meet some Chinese people, which I'm on a mission, because even though they ask you for directions and all, and you speak to them and this, that, and the other, they don't really, they're not a nation to smile much. But I'm on a mission now to get some of them to smile. I definitely have to do it.
Is that all the Chinese you're making up the Guinness, is it?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, they're asking for directions and everything else. You know?
Yeah.
Really and truly. You know? But you meet the Tea Party Americans. They're great. Oh, Jesus Christ. How did we ever live our life without those in it? And the expectations of them is really and truly unbelievable.
Yeah.
I did just, what can I do? What can you say to them? I got a good bit laugh out of them.
What do they do? What do they say for you?
Well, you always get to tea parties, and it'll always be, they'll be looking at their map. They'd say, do you know where Guinness is? And I go, second block, first left, up the street, first right. They don't catch it that quick. And they get frustrated because they don't like repeating themselves.
Yeah.
You know? Depends on how many is in the group. You'd get one that it'd be kind of a little bit, you know, jolly. And the jolly one would ask, you know? But you'd always get the tea party once. And I'd say, well, if you just lift your eyes, darling, it's on the post. It's right facing you.
Yeah.
You know, they don't like that.
Oh, you know? Brilliant. Here, Guinness should be throwing you a few quid for all the directions you get people up in the store.
Guinness's wouldn't give you an umbrella. They wouldn't even give you an umbrella to brand a standing. Guinness's has never, ever, 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 ever gave anything to street traders. Never. Mm-hmm. And all the parties they'd have, or Christmas things they'd have, or whatever the case may be, never. Never, ever, ever. Never, ever, 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 ever. As long as I know, I could even speak for my mother that's gone before me, my grandmother that's gone before me. Never, ever, ever have they gave anything to street traders.
So, can I ask you about your kids?
Yeah, I have a daughter, I have a son.
Of one of each? I was going to ask you how many you had.
Oh, I have two children.
And what was it like becoming a mother?
Great. Though, yeah, really and truly.
If it's too personal, just tell me to shut up.
That wasn't too personal. You see, I was a bit of a tomboy, you know. So, really, all those kind of sex classes and this, that, and the other. Sure, I always had something else to do. I'd always somewhere to go. I'd always work. I was either selling here or selling there or whatever the case may be. So I never really had any time for that. You know, now, I was very good at embroidery and all that. Mm-hmm. Now, couldn't knit or sew to save me life. Couldn't bake nothing if that was to save me life. So I was kind of stupid when I had a first child. And I wasn't that well educated when I had my second child. But shit me, I was a fast learner after that. Because I had no more. Definitely not.
Was it hard work?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, all that baby business, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. She's going to kill me for this. They were in play school here. And that was great, because that was at 4 o'clock. And, you know, the girls would say, come in, you know, we're closing. Calling. And that would be all right. But when they went to... When they went to school, sure, the nun had to ring me. Sure, I forgot to collect the child from school. And that was my daughter. And this is at 4 o'clock. Say, hello, yeah. Oh, Jesus, yeah. I said, I'll be with you in a minute. And I had to jump in the van and run to the school. And doing that, that actually happened to me a few times, where I'd forget because I was so used to the kids just dropping them into play school here. And should it be there till 4 o'clock, 4:30, whatever the case, even when the women be in there cleaning up and all, my two would be still there. But sure, I had that for years, you know, with them. And then going to the school, yeah, I used to forget to collect them. Never got to bring them to school now, but did forget to collect them from school.
Is it different being a granny then?
Oh, yes, of course there is, because more time. See, when you have children and all, you have to think if you want them to be better educated than yourself. And that takes time and it takes money. It certainly does take money. I laugh at free education. I don't know what part is free.
Mm.
You know, when they say it's free, it's not. Because you work, you have books to pay for, and if you want to push them forward, you have to pay for all of that. Now, I prefer if society said schooling is subsidised between the government and the parents here. Because
yeah.
That's exactly what it is. You know, it's a subsidised, but the biggest weight falls within the family for it.
Mm.
And that depends on your income, of course. You know, Of course, it depends on their income. But yeah, you know, you want them to go forward and all that. You certainly have to. Mm. You have to work damn hard.
And you were saying your granddaughter is really intelligent?
Oh, yes. Oh, and will go. She'll go far in her education once she's steered the right way. Yeah. And once there's no obstacles put in her way. Yes, she will. But it, you see, when I went to school, though there was hunger in the country. When I was in school, we used to have, there used to be, Kay and Dick, was it Kay and Dick? Or Mick, oh God, they were husband and wife, and they were the caretakers at the school. And you used to get an odd bit of bread and butter in the school, but then next of all, they started bringing in, and you got stew on a Monday and a Tuesday, and you got a few chips on a Wednesday, and you got stew on a Thursday, and you got a few chips. And when it started first, you would have got chips and a little bit of fish fingers on the Wednesday and Friday. But then it started, you got the stew for the 4 days, and on Friday you got chips.
Mm.
The couple of cleaners in the school, because they'd be there and they'd be giving out the dinners and all that. There was communication there. So if it was a thing that you showed any brightness in you and that, it'd be picked up, and sure, of course, then people would speak up to you with the teachers in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that wouldn't be that bright in school and all, and found it difficult to be textbooked education. You had those, the cleaners and Dick, and that used to give out the drop of soup and all of that. You had them there guiding them that they could do work. Because after school, he'd let a couple of kids sweep the yard with him. Kay had let people, you know, wash down the tables. And it wasn't on a one-to-one basis. It was a group.
Mm.
And he always asked you, and people in the area, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know?
Yeah.
And kids would say, well, I want to be a nurse, and I want to be a doctor, and I want to be a policeman. But you're always told you could be them people. You were always off the adults. When I was a child growing up, you were always told that, yes, you could achieve that. Go to school and learn at home.
Mm.
And people would say to you then, if you would just say, for instance, if there was something and you'd say to people, they'd say, ask your mammy and daddy that. Mr. So-and-so told you to ask your mammy and daddy. Mr. So-and-so told you to ask your mammy and daddy. You were to ask. You were encouraged to ask questions and to get answers. You expected answers back. Now, it might be jumble going around in your head at the time, but you asked them. You got answers. And you were always told, yes, you could be what you wanted to be. You were never disencouraged not to be that person. You don't have that in society now. They tell you in society now you're stupid. That's exactly what they tell you. They tell the children today they're stupid. I've seen it. I've heard it. And adults don't ask the children that anymore.
Mm.
Grown men and women, grannies and granddads. And these are grannies and granddads, I would say, is in their 50s and 60s. They don't ask their children that. That's what I find. They don't ask.
Mm.
And that's across the spectrum.
Can I ask you something else?
You can ask me anything you like, and if I can answer it, I will.
Do you believe in God?
Do I believe in God? Yeah.
And what type of God is it you believe in?
A very genuine and trusting God. Oh, yeah. And I believe, yes, I do. And I do believe that when you die, you can walk shoulder and shoulder with your loved ones and guide them in the right direction. And do I believe that there's evil people, and when they die, do they stay evil? Yes, I do believe in that. Oh, yes, I do. Oh, yeah.
What makes you believe in it?
Well, just things in life. Now, I wouldn't be one now to be running into Mass at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock every day. And I wouldn't be one to run into it on a Sunday either. I go, I do my own thing. I have discussions about religion and all like that, but I've always an open mind. Because remember, the opinions I would be given would be life experience that I had. I certainly wouldn't be given textbook preaching about it.
Mm.
And I wouldn't listen to anybody that would be textbook preaching about religion. My religion is my beliefs, and it's within me, and I do what I think is best. I have no intentions of doing any wrong on anyone. I just do what I think, as far as I know, within me, what's best. But I would not let anyone have any influence in me in the regard of religion.
Mm.
And like, I mean, I know, and on the street and all, you'd have all the different Christians and Harry Christians and born again Christians and whoever the yard and all of whoever they do be. Yes, they do try to talk. And they tried to talk to me and all. But the first thing I asked them is, I say, who told you that? Were you there? I closed my case. You weren't there. You read this in a book. How did you know who wrote that book? How do you know their frame of mind at the time? Were you there when they were writing it? Did you see this? No, you didn't. So, bye-bye.
Yeah.
Walk on. And I think this is what should be preached within all religion, all over the world, and it'd be grand. That other religion, Taliban religion, or Taliban, whatever,
yeah.
This thing, you know, if you go across, you know, if you go into their country, you're expected, these ones that wears these things across their face and everything, and you're expected, if you're there, it didn't matter where you come from, to do all of this, which is okay. It's their country. It's whatever they believe in or whatever they do, and that's grand. And yes, respect it. I do believe you should do that. I also believe here and now, and with all of this spin that's going on about around the world with them, I do believe. I only, just a customer today came, and I couldn't actually hear her through this thing on her face. And I did say it out straight. I said, hold on a second, no disrespect, but could you just lift this off, speak, and then I'll be, you know, I'll hear you. And of course, he went out, and I said, hold on a second, just wait there 1 minute, just, you know, put your feet back on the ground. We go to your country, we're expecting you wear this head thing and whatever the case may be. People go and they respect yours. Well, you're in another man's country. I'm not saying it's my country because it belongs to everybody that's here. But you're in mine. We don't wear them. So, like, have respect for the people that's here. So, you know.
And did she take it off?
No, he went into it. Tooty taddy too, and I just said, look, go on.
You lost the customer.
Off you go. No, I didn't do it as a customer. Because he came back, because he went and he, you know, whatever he was getting, and in supermarkets, and, you know, these are really smart whiz kids, you know, in maths. Oh, Lidl in them. And he done his maths and he came back. No, he came back, but she didn't come back with him. Simple as that.
You obviously love the country, right? You love Ireland.
Oh, definitely. Love it. Love it a bit. Think it's brilliant. I can't it fascinates me. We're Irish and we live here. And if you ask 90% of the Irish people what's Tipperary, like what's Galway, what's Mayo, what's Wexford, what's Kilkenny, Kildare, Clare. Go through it all. And you say, what's the countryside like? 90% wouldn't know. If you say to them, when I went down to Kerry and I was in there, they look at you as if you have two heads because they don't know what you're talking about. They really and truly don't know what they're talking about. What you'd be actually talking about. Mm. And that I can't understand.
And have you travelled all over?
I've travelled into a few places, yeah.
Yeah. And what's your favourite part of Ireland? Apart from the Liberties, of course.
Every part of it. Every part. I love it. I love going walking in the countryside. I love going down by the seas and the lakes and the rivers. Oh yeah, I love it. Yeah. Love it.
And are you looking forward to the 1916 then, celebrations?
1916 celebrations? No, I don't want to be caught for all that load of jingle jangle.
I'm just checking, I thought you'd be into it. Right, so nearly finished, last question.
Now, if there was a place where you could go and do pay your respects to the people that died for the right causes, yes, I would do that.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be caught up in all the jargon that goes with it. Oh, no, yeah. Wouldn't be.
Yeah. Have you any stories you've thought about that you thought, oh shit, I should have told him that?
No.
No, nothing? You can think of for grand.
Told you about robbing the yard, just told you about scutting. No.
Alright. The last question then. So what happens this now, right, is I go home and take out all, do you know the bits where maybe you've said it twice, or the wee bits where I ask a question or I need to check. So it goes down until about 40.
And where I'm hoarse and all this stuff.
Yeah, or when you're taking a drink of whiskey or whatever.
I don't drink whiskey. That's brandy to make brandy. Me randy. Go
on. So I'll start editing it, right? But my plan is that...
You have a plan?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it goes online, right? It goes on iTunes, it goes on Amazon, and people download it onto their phones, listen to it on Facebook or whatever, right?
Oh, yes.
So that's how they hear it. But my plan is that when I'm dead...
When you're dead? Jeez, don't die anytime soon. Go on.
When I'm dead, I'm going to leave some money behind, right? To keep this on the internet.
To keep it on the internet.
So,
well, now, excuse me from your ignorance, how do you do that?
So it costs about, at the minute it costs me about 200 quid a year to own the website, the place where it holds the files of the interviews. Just to keep that running, it's about 200 quid a year, right? So I'm hoping to leave enough money just to keep it online, right? Don't know where I'm going to get it, but I will. No, I've no doubt about it. So this is going to be a living history of Ireland in 2015. So I'm trying to meet as many people.
So this is going to be in 115, you mean?
Yeah, so like...
That's what you're hoping
for. Yeah.
Well, don't you give it to the archives, darling?
Well, I might. So it'll be something like that. Like, I want people in 100 years' time to be able to log on and go, who did he interview in the Liberties, or who did he interview in Belfast, or who did he interview down in Kerry, you know? It's going to stay there for as long as possible, right? My question is, if in the future generations find your interview, whether it be your great-great-great-grandchild or Joe Soap, what advice would you give them? And what, why?
Keep kindness in your heart. Definitely keep kindness in your heart. And always remember, every day that you open your eyes is a new day, and it's a learning day. And always think positive. Don't think negative. Think positive. Believe within yourself and smile.
Kathleen, thanks so much.
Pleasure.
Many thanks to Kathleen for the giggles and for sharing her story. I'm sure you'll agree the woman is full of character, has a sense of what's right, and the knowledge of how to mend our broken country. You can join the conversation